Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thursday, 1 o'clock, and once again, you have tuned in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We're coming to you from the back of Roberta's Pizza in beautiful Bushwick, Brooklyn. Today, a lot of action outside the studio, doing a little filming for the movie Girls. Very exciting. So check us out. I may get a little flash of radio on the season finale for season two of Girls. But more excitingly, for me at least, we are in studio with David Kotletsky of Empire Brewing and also president of the New York State Brewers Association. So welcome to the show, David.
Thank you, Erin. Good afternoon.
It's great to have you here. And then also very exciting, we have Becca Jablonski. Becca is a PhD candidate at Cornell University, and she was formerly the Agricultural Economic Development Specialist with Cornell Cooperative Extension. And welcome to the show, Becca.
Thanks for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about today. You guys I've brought on as the third in our five-part series called Growing Beer, where we're looking at beer as an agricultural product. And we kicked off the series 2 weeks ago with Mary Izzet, where we talked about kind of how beer is made. And then last week, if you tuned in, we were with Andrea Stanley of Valley Malt, looking at other infrastructure with regards to beer production in the Northeast. And today we're going to be speaking with Becca and David about an interesting piece of legislation and kind of more broadly how policy and advocacy can impact agriculture and beer in particular. So we are going to talk about the farm brewery legislation today. But before we kick off, I want to dig into a little bit more behind the people who are joining us on the show. And Becca, we're going to start with you. I'm curious, can you just give a sense of what your work as an agricultural economist entails and what that means?
Well, right now my dissertation work focuses on looking at the economic impacts of different legislation that would support ag-based businesses, particularly in rural places throughout the United States, and I'm particularly focused in New York at the moment.
And why do we care about that?
Well, our rural economies are not doing so well in New York State. We are lagging behind some of the urban centers. We have people who are leaving these rural places. In central New York, where I live, we're actually pretty stable with our population, but there are many places on the southern tier, for example, where we're losing population. So we're trying to think about how can we generate business that's going to create jobs for people to come and revitalize some of these areas that were once thriving.
Excellent. So I was looking at some information on the New York Brewers Association homepage, which is www.thinkdrinkny.com, of which David is the president. And they give a nice kind of breakdown of beer industry economic impact in New York State. And I was really surprised to see them listing the overall economic contribution of the beer industry at over $5 billion here in New York. And so they're looking at, in that number, brewing, distribution, and retail. And then if they look at industry-related jobs, it includes just over 2,300 jobs in agriculture. So it seems pretty clear that beer is having an impact on both the economy and also in agriculture. And David, I'm curious, in your role as a brewer, I mean, how did you kind of come to this agricultural conversation? Was it an obvious transition up at Empire Brewery, or did you come to it kind of throughout the beer making process when you were looking around, kind of trying to figure out what the brewery's role would be more long term?
Well, you know, I think it all started back in 2004 when I got a bunch of brewers together and said, you know, New York State beer needs to grow more. It needs to be more prevalent. And, you know, how should we go about that? And at the time, we had about 3% market share in New York State for overall beer sales. And one thing that I saw was that places like Colorado and Vermont and some other other states, Oregon's in particular, had a much greater market share for their local beers. And it seemed like all the breweries in New York State were fighting over that same 3% market share. So we formed an association, and we formed it with 18 breweries in New York State initially. At the time, there were 40 breweries in New York State, and we were relatively powerless. A lot of legislation was going down in Albany that we weren't even aware of. So we organized, we unified. Initially, the goal was to create an organization that really marketed our product and also protected the vital interest of New York State breweries. You know, oddly enough, in a 10-year span, not only have we tripled our market share in New York State for New York State beers, but we've also tripled the size of the breweries in New York State. We have over 120 breweries in New York now. In the last 10 years, we've tripled, which is phenomenal. And while working with the New York State Brewers Association and creating this guild, if you will, we learned a lot about the wine industry. And it seems like wine was getting all the attention and beer was not getting any attention at all. And we recognized that the reason why wine was getting so much attention was truly because it was recognized by the state as an agricultural product. And then the distilleries came out and the state recognized distilleries as an agricultural product. And we were like, this is crazy. Beer is agriculture just as much as both wine and spirits. So we fought for this legislation for the past 8 years. We communicated with people like Becca to help form what I would consider a relevant background and statistics on New York State beer so that we can prove to the state that we are, in fact, a viable business. And a lot of the numbers that you can find at thinknydrinkny.com come from an independent study that's done by the Brewing Institute for us on our behalf, and it comes out every 2 years. The new economic data is going to come out, I believe, this September. So the numbers that you're looking at now online are actually antiquated. We're going to see a much more significant impact this year. With this information, we're able to go to our elected officials in Albany and convince them that we are not only agricultural, but we could help grow New York State from an economic standpoint.
And so you have a long history with the New York Brewers Association, but you also run Empire Brewing Company, which is up in Syracuse, New York. Mm-hmm. And that, what is your day-to-day role with Empire Brew?
Well, on a daily basis, I guess I run the company for the most part. We have 70 employees. Fortunately, I'm surrounded by really good people, so I can be in New York and sell our beer product, but we are as much as a restaurant in Syracuse as we are a microbrewery. But we recognized that the future of our company really was in beer, and there was a demand for our beer beyond the confines of our brew pub. So about 2 years ago, we started brewing with Kelso in Brooklyn. So now we have our beer brewed in Brooklyn for distribution really throughout New York State, which is nice. But we're near capacity and in our Brooklyn operation, as well as we are at capacity in our Syracuse location. And the plan is now to build a farm brewery in Cazenovia, which is one of the rural areas that Becca was talking about. And the goal is really to utilize this legislation and really make something that is an agricultural component to the beer industry in upstate New York. So we're at that phase right now. So when you ask, you know, what am I doing on a daily basis, what I'm trying to do is build a new brewery.
Cool. Exciting.
Yeah, it's very cool.
You got your hands in a lot of pots.
I totally do.
So, Becca, I'm curious, you know, because this is what we'll be kind of referring to through the rest of the episode today. How are you guys defining a farm brewery? What does that mean?
Well, a farm brewery, it could mean many different things. The key piece here is that it's a brewery that would utilize New York State grown products. So the farm winery license that was legislation that was passed in 1976 meant that a winery was going to use grapes that were grown and processed in New York State. And so that's how the distillery law also worked. So the key thing then is that a farm brewery supports New York State ag businesses by utilizing those products. So a farm brewery can be a brewery where the hops or other ag products are actually grown on site, but it can also be a business that utilizes products that are grown on a neighboring farm.
Okay, and so currently there are two bills that are still currently under review. I mean, I was trying to get a sense. I know that it looked like towards the end of June that the S5078-2011 was committed to the rules. So where is the legislation at now? I mean, what does that mean?
All right. So there's the farm breweries, for the what you're referring to as a farm brewery bill.
Uh-huh.
A very interesting thing happened probably about 3 months ago, and there was an importer that sued New York State, and from this lawsuit resulted in New York State breweries losing both their excise tax exemption and also brand label registration fee exemption. And this is something that we've always been exempt from. It was viewed as unconstitutional.
We being craft brewers?
Craft brewers in New York State only.
Okay. And we're craft brewer is defined as what?
Brewers that brew less than 60,000 barrels annually.
Okay.
All right. So, but, you know, that's a small brewer. Above 60,000, you're still considered a craft beer if you're if you follow certain rules in brewing. You don't use adjuncts, et cetera. So when this law was challenged and there was a lawsuit where New York State was sued, there was a settlement immediately because it was viewed unconstitutional. It fell in the face of the Granholm Act, and all of a sudden, all these breweries in New York State had to pay excise tax. Now, we all pay tax, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't pay the excise tax, and we are now paying the excise tax. But what we did is we created a production tax credit that would offset the excise tax. What this amounts to for some of the breweries like Empire, it's an extra $30,000 a year that we have to pay an excise tax. And for us, for a small company, that's relatively steep. When you look at Brooklyn Brewery, I think theirs was their amount was something like $600,000. And for Genesee, that amount was $1 million. So we're talking significant dollars at this point.
And that's just a drop at the drop of this settlement. It was like, hey guys, guess what? Here's your bill.
And the next day we had to pay it. Yeah. And this was on March 28th.
Okay.
So
I remember it clearly.
Oh,
the day my stomach hit a pit.
Yeah. The day that every brewer in New York State called me and said, how did this happen? So we fought diligently, and I say we put together an executive committee, and we worked directly with our legislators. And one of the really cool things about the farm brewery, you're probably wondering where the heck I'm going to go with this, but one of the cool things about the farm brewery legislation and Albany, Cuomo saw this as an opportunity. He said, wait a minute, let's do this production tax credit. Let's do the brand label registration exemption, and the exemption is now he extended to all breweries, not just those in New York State. So if you're producing less than 1,500 barrels of one particular beer, you're exempt from paying brand label registrations, which is great for everyone. And the production tax credit will be for to offset that excise tax. But he packaged it with a farm brewery bill. And he made it all one inclusive bill, which was brilliant, in my opinion. So what he's doing is creating an economic engine for agricultural in New York State and allowing us to get these tax breaks. So the bill was signed into law about a month ago.
Okay.
So we now have a farm brewery license available to farmers throughout New York State.
Wow.
That's the long version of what happened.
One other thing in terms of economic impact about why what David's saying is so important.
Yes.
If you look at rural areas, there's just not a whole lot of economic activity. And economic impact in a community is based on the inner industry connections. So you want to have businesses that are buying from each other and selling to each other. And that basically keeps the money local, and it means that we can generate more money for everybody in that community. And by community, I mean I'm talking about it could be a village, it could be a town, it could be a state. And so as we create more of these businesses that buy from each other and sell to each other, it's really good for everyone. And so what David is doing with Empire Brewery, for example, is he's purchasing product directly from these local farms that are in his community. They in turn go to his restaurant, they buy his beer. It generates more of these inner industry linkages. And when we talk about economic multipliers, that's exactly what we're talking about. So it basically multiplies the economic impact of these different benefits. So, you know, David employs 70 people. He pays those people salaries. Those people then spend money in those communities where they live. And that's really important, particularly for rural areas where you have less of these businesses there.
I mean, in particular, I guess, if the breweries are located in rural areas, obviously the farms or the production of, you know, grains or hops would be located in rural areas, which is what I want to tuck into. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll look a little bit more at the supply end of this discussion.
Just rings and rings. You're listening to Side A of Cry Baby by Cooper. But you live in my mind. It's how the story goes. You gotta call on your other line. Yeah, I know.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we're back. You are tuned into the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to the Farm Report. We are talking about growing beer. We are in studio with David Kedleski of Empire Brewing Company and Becca Jablonski from up at Cornell. She's a PhD candidate and an agricultural economist. And so we've created this, you and David and a slew of other people in New York State have worked hard, it sounds like, to create this brewery legislation, to create this special designation for breweries that are using New York State products. And I'm curious, how much is enough? I mean, how much product do you have to use to get the designation? Is there a tiered system, or how does it work from a consumption? And then what is the supply looking like as far as with regards to scale? And maybe, Becca, you can give us a sense.
I'll let David talk about the sort of how much is enough from the brewer's perspective, because I'm sure he can give you the ins and outs. I mean, the bottom line for it is that think it's by 2023 or 2024 that no less than 90% of the hops and 90% of other ag ingredients must be grown in New York State.
That's correct. To qualify as a farm brewery, and there is a step, Aaron, you're right. And Becca, if I could, it's 20% up until 2018, and then beyond 2018 up to 2023, it's 60%, and then beyond that, 90%. And it's lofty expectations, in my opinion, for New York State to expect that we are going to use that much product. However, I think it's the impetus behind this legislation that's going to drive farmers to grow hops and to grow barley and to have malt shops. Right now, there is no sizable quantity of two-row barley available in New York State because there is no malt shop. And I've been helping three different companies get grants from New York State to build malt shops, and then the farmers will then grow the barley. But I think what's going to happen is this. The nice thing about it is the law exists, and I think it will adjust accordingly. Because I think 5 years from now, if we go to the state and say, hey, listen, there's just not 20% of barley available for all of us brewers, I think they'll understand that and they'll adjust it downward. But I think the ultimate goal from this legislation is really to get the farmers to start planting.
And Becca, do you have a sense of what production looks like now? I mean, I know that you, I believe, wrote the grant to fund the specialty crop, the state's first hop specialist through Cornell, to have someone kind of come in and look specifically at hops. So how much, I mean, do you know what we're producing right now? Is there a baseline that was used when crafting the legislation?
Yeah, so I would say, a few years ago, when we wrote the grant, we had about 13 acres in commercial production, and that may be on the high side. And for those 13 acres, our yields were pretty low compared to even Vermont, but particularly compared to the Pacific Northwest, which is right now the largest hop producing region in the country. I want to say that actually New York State and Central New York used to be the hop growing capital of the world. China is actually now the largest hop producer, but New York State used to be. And a combination of aphids, some powdery mildew or downy mildew, I always get the two confused, and then prohibition really killed the industry here.
Yeah, I mean, so, it was the largest industry in the world like 120 years ago.
Right.
Okay.
Right, exactly, in the late 1800s. So there's certainly potential to bring it back. We don't have the growing conditions of the Pacific Northwest. Where it's grown over there, it's really a more of an arid climate, so they can they're pretty safe from getting some of these mildews. And actually, this year was a very tough year for some of the hop producers. And in addition to that, we haven't bred any varieties that are suitable for this region in many, many years. There was one person at Cornell who did some research to find what was the indigenous variety of hops here, and they actually found it in Europe, in England, and they brought it back here. And so they're doing a little bit of cultivation around there. But getting a plant breeding program going is very, very expensive, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars just to start off with. And so we're really, at this point, sort of decades behind. So what's happening is growers in New York State are actually using varieties that they're bringing in from the Pacific Northwest. They grow here, but they're not meant for this climate. And I think, and David could speak more to this, that brewers would really like to see some kind of New York State hop variety that was really meant for this area.
Go ahead, sorry.
Well, no, so I was just going to say that, so what we're seeing right now, we may have, by the end of next year, as many as 70 acres of hops in commercial production. But number one, it takes 3 years to get those plants up to where they're producing it at the ultimate levels. And second of all, this was a really bad year. We had some of our hop growers, actually someone who's right down the road from me, who purchased some plants from the Pacific Northwest and had 90% failure in germination of those rhizomes. So that's a real problem. They've now lost a year in getting to that 3 years of optimal production. So that's significant loss in terms of revenue. You're talking about $11,000 an acre to plant hops, depending on, that includes labor costs. You may be able to save some, depending on what you do. So there's a lot of variables to really get the hops production up to what the people who are going to get farm brewery licenses would really need.
And I'm curious, you know, why is it that the hop, it seems that people are really excited to talk about hops, but my understanding of the beer making process is that the bulk of the raw ingredients are barley or other grains. And I know, you know, Grow NYC here in New York City, through the green markets, they have a regional grain growing project. They have a great Facebook page. They've done a lot of work over the last few years really looking at New York State grains and older varieties of grains here in New York. And why is it that the it just seems like hops get all the attention? Like, what's up with that? And what about grains? Like, what is the baseline for grain production? And how does that look to meet the 20% goal that exists now, or the 90%, you know, 10 years from now?
My understanding, and David, I really hope you'll correct me here, is that hops are, I think, always been the sort of sexy part of beer, that there's a sort of a taste that's lent through the hops. I'm sure there is also through the grains,
right,
but
think
that's
it's
really
because
distinctive.
They're also they're a member of the cannabis family. So I think that's a sex appeal right there.
No, yeah, I mean...
go ahead, Becca, you're on a roll.
Well, no, I'd say too, like, I understand the appeal, but obviously when you're looking at the infrastructure to kind of support a piece of legislation like this, I would assume that the bulk of investment would be in the bulk of the ingredient that you need.
Well, I think that part of it was that there was a severe hop shortage one year, a few years ago, and I want to say it was like in 2007, 2008. David, is that right?
That's correct.
Not even a year, right?
Yep.
So there was this big hop shortage, and so hop prices were really at an all-time high. And I think people saw that and thought, well, this is a great industry to get into, and there's a real opportunity here, as opposed to malt. As I understand it, there's really a glut of malt nationwide. So there's this overproduction. So the problem is that there were a few specific circumstances that caused that short-term shortage in hops. There was a big fire in one of the biggest warehouses,
the Yakima Valley,
in the Pacific Northwest, and then also it was a really bad year weather-wise for hop producers. So that situation has really changed. I think one of the specific opportunities for hops is that it's such a small percentage of ingredients and expenditures for the brewers that there may be an opportunity for brewers to pay a premium and not have it affect their bottom line as much as potentially the grains that I think are a much larger part of their bottom line. David, would you agree with that?
Completely.
And so, David, you're brewing now. Are you able to source ingredients regionally?
We get, there's two beers that we make with all New York State ingredients, but the malt that we're having grown in New York State then has to be shipped to Massachusetts to get malted. So, again, I don't think that this legislation is going to, or this license is going to work until we get a malting shop in New York State. Now, I know the Hudson Valley region is looking at putting a malt shop. Also, the Finger Lake region is looking at putting in two. Once that happens, I think the farmers will then grow two-row barley, send it to the malt shop, and then we're going to be able to have affordable grains, because it's almost cost prohibitive to grow grains here, ship them to outside of the state, have them malted, and then ship them back. The transportation costs are just ridiculous, and frankly, it's not that great for the environment, right? Because you're shipping all this, and the carbon footprint just expands when doing so. So I think ultimately what we want to do with this legislation is to have a lot of the farm breweries grow their own hops and convince a lot of their friends to grow the barley. The new brewery that we're building in Cazenovia is a 22-acre facility, and the brewery itself will be about 24,000 square feet, but we are going to dedicate close to 5 acres of just hops. The hops that we're using in upstate New York, in my humble opinion, are the best hops, and they produce the best beer that we've seen in Empire's 18-year history. So we think this particular indigenous Cascade hop to upstate New York is the future of Empire's beer, and hopefully will be used in other and other New York State breweries as well.
So, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunities for someone to get out there and be the first kind of couple people and create some systems and look at varieties that will make sense and take those chances. And, you know, Becca, you're working through Cornell and the Northeast Hop Alliance, or, you know, have. And then, David, you're a brewer and then also president of the New York State Brewers Association. So how are you guys engaging or have you in the past with farmers or stakeholders from the farming community to get a sense of, you know, what their needs might be or what kind of resources that they're looking for to kind of go along with you in the pursuit of more regionally produced New York craft beer?
Well, the association works really closely with the New York Farm Bureau, and I lobby each year in Albany on behalf of farmers. So we've kind of created some lines of communication that way. Becca's done an amazing job with really bringing the hops to the forefront of thought for a lot of the farmers, and bringing a hop specialist like Steve Miller was instrumental. I think that Becca may have had something to do with the grant that Steve received for his funding, and hopefully, and I don't know, Becca, do you know the status of the renewal of that grant? Is he going to continue on as our hop specialist in New York State?
That's certainly the goal. We got a grant through New York State Department of Ag and Markets, through their specialty crop grant program, to fund the first New York State hop specialist for 2 years. And the way we were able to build the case for that was that we realized that there was a lot of interest in growing hops, and there was almost no expertise left in the New York this region. You know, as I mentioned, you know, hops really had not been grown commercially in New York State since Prohibition. So we held our first hops conference, and we sold out within, I think, 2 weeks with about 90 participants at the FX Matt Brewery. And we actually had to bring in experts from Wisconsin to teach the class. And we thought, this is ridiculous. We need this level of expertise here, not just to teach these courses, but to actually go out to the farms to work with growers who are interested. And so that's why New York State thought it would be a good idea. And now the Northeast Hop Alliance with Steve Miller actually hold field day events. I think they have at least 4 this year, working closely with the University of Vermont, that also has a hops research team. And actually, University of Vermont is a little bit ahead of New York State in terms of trying to do more of these field trials. So it's nice that there's some good collaboration there. But I would encourage anyone who's listening to go to the Northeast Hop Alliance website. It's a great place to go and find out about classes. You know, we get a lot of calls from people who say, hey, I want to put in, you know, 100 acres of hops. And that's probably not realistic at this point. Hops are, as I said, it costs about $11,000 an acre to put them in. And so it's something that I think at this point is better done at a small scale where people can really pay attention to the quality. These are flowers we're talking about. It's really the essential oils that make those hops so great and make, as David said, some of the, you know, best beer that he's made. And so you really want to think about, I think, the quality in this, and in terms, and not the quantity, because New York State is never going to be able to compete with China or the Pacific Northwest just in terms of quantity of production and price.
Okay, thanks. Well, we are out of time. If you are interested in learning more about this subject, Becca put together a really nice research and policy brief through the Community and Regional Development Institute. You can do a little Google search for that. You can find out more about the Northeast Hop Alliance by visiting nehopalliance.org. Check out some of David's beer. David, where in the city can folks find a little Empire Brew?
That's a good question. It's probably like 300 different places now. Restaurants and bars. We only keg right now. New facility will be canning, but throughout most of New York State.
Sure. And if you find yourself up in Syracuse, visit them. Their website's www.empirebrew.com. The New York State Brewers Association, like we said earlier, you can find them at thinkdrinkny.com. And if you want to tuck more into the grains issue, I highly recommend checking out grownyc.org and their regional grains program. Stay tuned with us next Thursday. We'll be speaking with the folks at Good Nature Brewing and Blind Bat Brewing talking a little bit about the use of local products in beer from the brewer's perspective. Once again, you've listened to the Farm Report on the Heritage Radio Network. We are a member-supported network, so hit that donate button on the website or tune in to us through iTunes and Stitcher, and we'll see you next week. Thanks so much.
Hot at the green market? You're about to find out now. It's the Grow NYC Market Update.
All right, we are on the line with Jean Hodesh, who's the publicity coordinator for Grow NYC Green Markets. And we are going to find out what's happening at the markets, what's on the way out, what's new, what's not to miss, what's happening over in your neck of the woods, Jean.
Hey, Erin. So we are officially into September, which is really a favorite month of the year here on Green Market. You have pretty much everything is in season at the market right now. So you've got the end of the summer fruit, all the stone fruit, nectarines, peaches, plums, watermelons, cantaloupe, and corn. I'd say if you are loath to admit that fall is just arriving and you're still really trying to hang on to summer, make sure you get to the market and pick up some of those items. Can them, freeze them, pickle them, jam them, and put them up for the months ahead. And I would also say that the prices are pretty low at this point, so look for those good deals. And then besides that, I mean, what's new right now? It's such an overwhelming array. So if you go to the market, you will find bins of artichokes next to pumpkins, next to celery, the first of the delicata squash I spied the other day. There are flats and flats and flats of tomatoes, all kinds of sun golds, green zebras, black prince, beefsteak. We've got over 200 varieties in the market. And then next to tomatoes, you'll find collards, kale, eggplants, hot peppers, sweet peppers, and a whole rainbow of potatoes, everything from purple potatoes to russet potatoes to fingerlings. So there's plenty to cook with. And I would say not to miss, today is the first day of school for New York City Public Schools, and we've got apples in the market. So you can either pick up some apples and win your teacher over, or just maybe buy them to put in your kids' lunches. And there are so many different kinds of varieties. We've got over 150 different varieties in the market. Some are sour, some are sweet, they're crunchy, you can sample them. And they're sharing the table with pears and grapes, and pretty soon they will also be sharing the table with quince, which is something that I wanted to point out, a really good thing to keep your eyes open for. I haven't seen any yet, but soon we'll see quince coming in, and they have the most amazing fragrance. They originate from Eastern Europe and Central Asia, and they are in the same family as rose hips. They're really high in vitamin C, and they're really like astringent, like you could use them. They're full of pectin, so you could actually use them to thicken up jelly if that's something that you're making. Or you can just make like quince paste and boil down the quince with honey, and it's really delicious. People serve it with cheese a lot. Something else that I wanted to highlight that I think is special from the market is celery, which is something people might overlook or not even think that they could pick up in the market. But it's been growing all summer out in the field, and now it is in for harvest in the market. And it's totally unlike the celery you get at the grocery store. It's far less watery. It has a really distinct flavor. And if you add it to stock for a soup, it's going to show up or if you just cut it up and throw it into a stew, it really adds an extra layer of flavor that that you shouldn't miss out on. Or if you just want to slice it up and eat it as an after-school snack, it's delicious. Serve it with hummus, or my old roommate used to love to make pimento cheese and dip celery in it, but it's got an excellent crunch and just a really intense flavor.
Oh, that's such a great suggestion. I love the Pfaffenroth Gardens celery for a celery tart, like a savory celery tart with Swiss cheese, maybe a little ham from Flying Pigs, and you're good to go. So sounds like if you haven't been in the city for most of August, you're lucky. And now you're lucky to come back and find the market still full of everything that you would be looking for, from stone fruit to peppers to tomatoes. So hop out there and check everything out. What about events? Anything going on in the market area that we should be sure to stop by at?
Absolutely. So this Saturday, as sort of a back-to-school, welcome-back-to-the-city event, at Union Square, we're going to have the first-ever Green Market Youth Education Sandwich Smackdown. And there's still room if you have a group of kids who you are trying to get out of your house and get them to do something fun on Saturday. We're having teams still sign up. You could email us, Liz Carollo at greenmarket.growonyc.org is organizing the event, but kids are going to make sandwiches using ingredients from the market and then sample them for a panel of judges. There will be prizes, so that should be a fun competition. And then on Sunday in the Tompkins Square Park over in the East Village, we're having Green Market Iron Chef. It's Veselka versus Hearth. That's starting at 1, so come by and watch those two restaurants from the East Village go head-to-head as they prepare a dish with ingredients from the marketplace. And then in Tribeca on Saturday the 15th, we're having a salsa off. So plenty of competition in the market these days. So if you think you've got what it takes to win the salsa competition, there's information on the Tribeca Green Market website on how to enter and show the market what you've got.
Awesome. Well, thanks for those updates. And of course, I'd be remiss to not shout out our own event here at the Heritage Radio Network. We're throwing a party in the back garden of Roberta's, and it's another way to taste some amazing Grow NYC Green Market vegetables. We've got Mike Anthony from Gramercy Tavern doing a selection of roasted vegetables. Shauna Pacifico from Back 40 West will be here doing a summer's last hurrah tomato salad, and tickets are still available for that. You can find them at heritageradionetwork.eventbrite.com. So get them while they're hot. Jean, we look forward to talking to you next week. In the meantime, if people want more info on the farmers, the market, or volunteer opportunities, they can visit the website, www.grownyc.org, to learn more. This has been another episode of the Grow NYC Market Update.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.